This week on New York Now, Governor Andrew Cuomo delivers his 10th State of the State address. We'll have analysis of his proposals, reaction from lawmakers, and much more. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.
Today, the Senate majority will pass
a law prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Yet another stand for New York and sending a message to the nation.
Welcome to New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. It's been a busy week in Albany as lawmakers return to the Capitol for this year's legislative session. Governor Andrew Cuomo delivered his 10th State of the State address on Wednesday at the Empire State Plaza Convention Center in Albany. But this week wasn't all about Cuomo. Democrats in the state Senate got another potential shot toward a supermajority. Long Island Republican Senator Ken LaValle announced he will not be seeking re-election. LaValle's exit makes 9 vacancies to fill in this year's elections. Meanwhile, Senate Minority Leader John Flanagan said Senate Republicans will make repealing the state's new laws on cash bail a top priority this year. Those laws took effect just last week. On the Assembly side, Brian Kolb has stepped down as Minority Leader following his arrest on New Year's Eve for drunken driving. Oswego County Assemblyman Will Barclay was chosen this week to replace him. So now let's get back to the state of the state. It was the second of Cuomo's third term. New York Now's Jessica Marshall has more on Cuomo's plan for the year and what top lawmakers thought about it.
New York State's motto is Excelsior. In Latin, it means ever upward. It's been the state motto since 1778. And it's emblazoned on the state emblem that's stamped on government buildings and flags across the state. Near the end of his State of the State address, Andrew Cuomo said he wanted to make a small edit to this long-standing motto.
Let New York State remind the nation of who we are, and let's add E Pluribus Unum to the seal of our state and proclaim at this time the simple truth that without unity, we are nothing.
The unusual proposal comes in the wake of attacks last month on members of the Jewish community in New York City and in Rockland County. With some of those affected by those attacks looking on in the front row, Cuomo offered a slew of proposals to curb hate crimes and increase public safety, namely expanding his hate crimes task force, heightening security at schools and places of worship, and instituting a new domestic terrorism law.
And let's pass the first in the nation domestic terrorism law to include mass violence motivated by hate and send the strongest message across this state and nation. New York will not stand by when our people are being victimized and killed by hate.
Cuomo bookended his yearly address with a push against hate crimes. The rest featured a self-described progressive agenda that included legalization of recreational marijuana, tax cuts for small businesses and the middle class, and increased spending to fight climate change. But it was what he said, or didn't say, about how the state was going to make up a $6 billion deficit that was on lawmakers' minds afterward.
The governor had a lot of proposals in there that are going to cost money without really addressing how we're going to fix this deficit.
Republicans, who face an even larger minority in the legislature this session, were largely critical of Cuomo's progressive agenda. Republican Committee Chair Nick Langworthy was especially critical.
It reminds me a lot of a speech of a guy that wishes he was running for president, but maybe didn't have the guts to try.
On Thursday, Senate Minority Leader John Flanagan called for a full repeal of the criminal justice reforms, especially elimination of cash bail that took effect on January 1st. Western New York Senator Patrick Gallivan said on Wednesday after Cuomo's speech that he was disappointed that the speech did not address the issue.
No, and I think it was very glaring in the absence from his speech that he didn't address it. That's the number one thing I'm hearing about right now from my constituents. And I think it's somewhat similar across the state. When I look at the media accounts across the state of these different stories of criminals being released and reoffending again, there's no question people across the state are concerned and we need to deal with it.
On the other side of the aisle, Democrats appeared cautiously optimistic.
I think it was a good Democratic progressive message, a good starting point, particularly touching on issues that I think are important to to our Democratic hearts, speaking about poverty, health care, getting opioid education, all of the things, college affordability, all of the things that matter to us. So I think it's a good starting point.
Cuomo set the blame for the gaping budget deficit squarely on increases in Medicaid costs that the state shoulders on behalf of local municipalities.
You can't separate administration from accountability. It is too easy to write a check when you don't sign it. The situation is unsustainable. We have restructured Medicaid before with our MRT program, and we're going to have to do it again this year.
The State Department of Health announced a 1% cut to Medicaid spending on New Year's Eve. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie voiced a bit of caution on the topic of Medicaid spending after the address.
It's going to be a long and complicated conversation because, as I said before, we really don't want to see services to people cut. We have 95% of the people in the state receiving health care. We don't want to see that number go down.
Good government groups are watchful as well.
The devil will be in the details when the budget comes out, but that's what we will be looking for, because that would be a reversal of a great element of progress that he's made.
Manhattan Democrat Senator Brad Hoyleman has proposed other avenues to close the budget gap that target the wealthy, like reviving the state's old yacht tax.
I appreciate, though, everything the governor said about, you know, continuing to grow their economy, the investment in infrastructure and education couldn't be more important at this time. But let's face it, we got to come up with additional revenue, and it needs to come from the sources that can pay. And I, for one, look at ability to pay, and that's what I'm going to be working on.
Governor Cuomo plans to deliver his budget address in Albany on January 21st. In the meantime, the question of exactly how much his proposals will cost, including an update to the state motto, is unanswered. But Cuomo ended his speech much the way he started.
And when you try to divide the great state of New York, we will stand up tall. We will stand up unified. We will stand up and we will fight. And we will win because we are right. And that is the New York way. Excelsior, thank you and God bless you.
In Albany, I'm Jessica Marshall.
And now let's unpack the state of the state some more here on the Reporters Roundtable. With me is Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio and Yancey Roy of Newsday. Thank you both for being here. I appreciate it.
And welcome, Dan, to your first time hosting this.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here. So both of you have seen plenty of State of the State addresses, especially from this governor. Yancey, I'm not sure how long you've been here.
Don't ask me to count.
Okay, I won't ask you to count.
No, those questions are off limits.
But tell me how this one compared to past addresses by this governor.
I think that this was one of Cuomo's better speeches. He focused a lot on fighting against hate crimes, the terrible wave of anti-Semitism that's been happening in New York. He used a lot of kind of soaring, I want to say poetic rhetoric. It was well received by the crowd. There were a couple times people actually stood up and clapped. I mean, not everybody totally loves this governor in New York State, but they really responded very well to his speech. So I thought that he did a good job in laying out, you know, what's going on in a very turbulent world and laying out some of the proposals that he wants to get accomplished this year.
Yancey, what do you think?
I mean, context is everything on these State of the State addresses. And I think some important things that laid the backdrop of context here is, first of all, 2019 was a very big year for Democrats and progressive issues. They got so many big things done, rent control and guns and abortion and all of these. So the first point to make is that we're looking at a lot of leftovers that didn't get done, marijuana and some lower profile stuff this year, electric bikes, electric scooters, those sorts of things. The second part of context is there's a big deficit. $6 billion deficit. And so what were some of the highlights related to that? He had a lot of things that don't cost any money, banning certain types of fentanyl, banning styrofoam cups, easy things, no money. And then big things that cost a lot way down the line in the future, such as a massive expansion of Penn Station and the Environmental Bond Act, borrowing $3 billion to do an array of environmental projects, all in the distant future, not so much maybe on this year's tab.
So that's we'd eventually pay for the Bond Act, but not now.
We're going to talk about the Bond Act a little bit later, but for me, going into the address, I think the biggest two issues that I was looking at personally was the legalization of marijuana in New York, because that flopped last year, and the deficit, as you said, it was huge. On marijuana, the governor hasn't really changed, it seemed to me, from last year. And we actually have a clip of what the governor had to say when he was saying that he was going to support it. So let's listen to him.
Our economic growth would be a hollow victory if we did not continue our social progress. For decades, communities of color were disproportionately affected by the unequal enforcement of marijuana laws. Last year, we righted that injustice when we decriminalized possession. This year, let's work with our neighbors, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania, to coordinate a safe and fair system, and let's legalize adult use of marijuana.
So what struck me about that part of the governor's speech is that he says that he wants the state legislature and him to work with these other states like New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania to legalize marijuana. And to me, I want to hear your opinion, but it seemed like that may complicate things down the road.
Well, I think it would complicate things, but it also makes sense. I mean, look at what's happening with the neighboring state of Massachusetts, where marijuana is legal, and a lot of New Yorkers and people from New Jersey go over and buy it, bring it back. I think that they're hoping that if they kind of set the same taxes, same kind of rules, that maybe it'll work together a little better instead of every state being different. So it makes sense, but you're right, it does complicate things. But it also gives the governor more power because he's dealing with these other states, and then the legislature might have to go more along with the way he wants it structured.
Yancey, remind us what happened last year with marijuana and why it didn't end up being legalized in New York. It seemed very poised to pass at the beginning of the year last year.
Money, money, money. I mean, it comes down to money. How much is taxed and where does that money go? That's the main thing. I mean, look, there are some complicated details to be worked out. Who grows it? How do you grow it? Who can sell it? All of these things. But the chief holdup was, where's the money going to go? Governor Cuomo, like most chief executives, want, whenever there's revenue coming in, they want it to go to the general fund, which can be distributed generally by the governor.
They can use it as they see fit.
Right. And the legislators, especially African-American and Hispanic legislators who feel that marijuana laws were unevenly enforced for all these years, say that a good portion of this money has to go in the communities that were most impacted. And that's kind of where it broke down last year, and that's going to be the hardest thing to solve this year.
I think if it's in the budget, it probably has a lot more likely chance of passing than as a standalone bill. Last year, it became a standalone bill, and they just didn't have the votes in the state Senate. There was also senators, I think, from the area you cover, Long Island, Democrats, who really did not want to go out on a limb and, you know, have a standalone vote saying, yes, I want to legalize cannabis, where if it's part of the budget, they can say, well, hey, I got you school aid, we did this and that.
Right, but I had to vote for it to get all this school aid, and yeah, this was part of it.
I think you were exactly right. To the governor's credit, I remember last year he said during the budget, if marijuana doesn't happen during the spending plan, it's not going to happen at all. And I remember at the time, us as a reporter said, well, why do you think that? And he said, trust me.
Yeah.
And turns out it didn't happen during the budget. So it'll be really interesting to see if the conversation changes this year in the Senate, whether it's going to be an election year issue. Do you guys think, because this polls very well, how do you think this works out politically?
Well, it does. It polls well upstate in New York City, but Long Island suburbs, I guess Yancey would know more about that. The feeling is mixed, right, about whether it's a good idea or not?
You know, if you want to look down towards the budget and what gets thrown in and what doesn't, the budget is, because it's such a massive document, things that are disparate and not related get thrown in so as to get everyone to go for it. I mean, and we haven't gotten to this yet, but bail reform.
Right.
Yeah. People want to change the bail law that's only 10 days old as we speak right now. That would be hard to do in a standalone vote, right? Like marijuana might be hard to do in a standalone vote. Does that get shoved into the budget as well.
So let's talk about bail reform really quick before we get onto the state of the state. But I think this is also related because the governor didn't mention bail reform in the state of the state at all, despite it being one of his major accomplishments from last year. He mentioned his accomplishments over the past 9 years, but he didn't mention bail reform as an accomplishment. He didn't mention it at all.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, now we're seeing that some Democrats want to change it. And Yancey, you've been reporting on some bills that are going to be coming up by Democrats in the Senate that could possibly roll it back a little bit. Tell us about those.
Yeah, if anything, it's the Long Island Democratic delegation that's probably leading the charge within the Democratic conference to say we need to roll this back. And this is going to set up a huge tension point between your moderate Democrats and your more liberal Democrats, and how is this going to get resolved? There's a bill that was introduced this week, Monica Martinez of Suffolk County, that would add a judge would be able to hold someone before a trial if they thought that person was dangerous. Jim Gorin, also of Suffolk County, is finalizing a bill that would add a whole list of crimes back to bail-eligible crimes, such as manslaughter, would be probably the top one on the list.
Very interesting. We're going to check back with you on that for sure in the coming weeks.
And I would just add on that the governor did say in a speech back on Monday to a business group that, yeah, he would consider walking some of that stuff back.
Which is interesting because before that part, I believe the governor's office had been mum on whether they wanted to change it, but I could be mistaken.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a big achievement, and now it's a little embarrassing that, you know, politically for them that some things aren't going, you know, there's been some bad publicity over repeat offenders being let out, and so.
Hate crimes.
And it was the first time he said, we have to change it.
Right.
It was the first time he said have to, as opposed to look at it, you know, people saying we might look at it.
It's something that he's going to talk to behind closed doors with lawmakers, as opposed to something that he's just putting out there for feelers. So going back to the state of the state, I just want to talk about this kind of strange proposal. It came out of left field. The governor wants lawmakers and members of commissions that make more than $100,000 a year to make their tax returns public every year. And I don't know if you heard this during the address, but there was kind of some grumbling among the crowd when he said it. Let's listen to what he had to say about this proposal.
Let Albany set a simple, new, inarguable national standard. Let's be bold. Every state commissioner, the governor, the lieutenant governor, the attorney general, the controller, every assembly member, every senator, any elected official in the state of New York who earns over $100,000 a year should set a new level of disclosure and transparency by making New York State taxes available to be seen by the public, because we have nothing to hide. Let New Yorkers know.
So I just don't know where this one came from. Any insight on why the governor would want to push something like this?
Well, it was a part of the speech that wasn't particularly well received, I think, compared to some of the other parts. I don't know. Maybe it goes back to his 2018 primary campaign. He had a primary challenger, the actor Cynthia Nixon, and she was a little bit reluctant to put out her taxes, that he feels like he's done his taxes all this time, so maybe there's an advantage, and maybe somebody running against him in the future, this sets a precedent. I mean, I don't know. That's just my guess, really, at this point.
Yeah, to me, it came out of left field, but we'll have to see whether lawmakers even want to go along with it. I think some of them may see this as the governor trying to kind of play off of President Trump not releasing his taxes.
Yeah, that too.
Obviously, Republicans aren't in the majority, so they don't have much of a say with that, but we'll have to see whether Democrats go along with it.
And keep in mind, when you get to the budget, there's like 1,000 items or more, thousands of items to negotiate. And it's there's always, from either side, either House or the governor, there's always something that they throw out there that they know the other entities are not going to go for.
Right.
But it's a bargaining chip. Okay, I'll give up this one if you give up that one. I can't say that I know this is that, but you have to sometimes look at these in the context of that. Sometimes things are thrown out there just for bargaining purposes.
Something that might have more of an appetite among the legislature, but we just don't know right now, is this proposal from the governor to do a new criminal charge for domestic terrorism in New York. We don't have it the way it is right now. This charge that the governor is trying to implement would be a Class A felony, the highest level. The sentence would be life without parole. Let's listen to what he had to say about that proposal in the state of the state.
We've had a disturbing number of discrimination attacks, but the greatest increase has been in the number of anti-Semitic attacks. Government's first responsibility, protect the people. And we will. We will prosecute these crimes to the greatest extent of the law, and we now must change the law to address this growing threat. Let's acknowledge displays of hate-filled mass violence for what they are. They are domestic terrorism. That's what they are.
So this is something that the governor first proposed in August, I believe, after the El Paso, Texas shooting. It's kind of morphed since then. Where do you see this going with the legislature? Do they have appetite to enact something like this? Let's go with the ANC first.
You know, if you're going to try to, any idea of like combating terrorism, domestic terrorism, hate crimes is going to have a lot of widespread support, generally speaking. However, you're also going to run up against sort of an institutional tension, especially among the Assembly, which has long been run by Democrats, who've really, as an institution, been opposed to increasing criminal penalties kind of across the board. It's a hard sell for the Assembly to go for increasing criminal penalties. So you're going to have those two tensions. Everyone wants to cut down on terrorism versus we don't want to increase penalties.
I don't know. I think this would be a hard one to oppose,
I agree.
Given what's going on. And I guess the governor just wants to give law enforcement another tool to use. I mean, I think he, you know, Cuomo wants to have something to respond to this.
I think after the Monsey attack in Rockland County just a few weeks ago, it would be very difficult for lawmakers, especially in the suburbs, to say, and in the city, to say that they would be opposed to that. But if they want to change my mind, that's, I think it would be very interesting to see if they did oppose it.
And it would, and if they do it, it'll also sort of counterbalance some of the criticism, perhaps, on bail. It would give a law and order win, if you will.
So the last state of the state proposal that I want to talk about just briefly is this Environmental Bond Act.
We must develop the solution to the harmful algal blooms before they destroy our water source. We must restore fisheries and streams and wetlands. We must conserve more forest areas. We must replant more trees. We must filter more drinking water. We must stop the nitrogen runoffs. And that's what the Restore Mother Nature Bond Act will do, those investments and more.
This is very interesting to me because we didn't really, we know the governor has made climate change a priority. We know that he wants to spend money for environmental purposes, but this is $3 billion that the state would essentially borrow. Do I have that right, Karen?
Yeah. I mean, that's the bond tax. It's a long-term bond. You pay, by the time you pay the interest, it's more than $3 billion, but it's something that, you know, future taxpayers are going to pay. It's not paid right now. It's a way to get quick money for something that you need money that you don't have to raise spending or taxes for.
And Yancey, what is this money for? What are we spending it on?
Well, there wasn't a ton of details, I mean, but there were some. Some of the things he said was to double the amount of artificial reefs, which is in New York waters basically means Long Island. He said restocking clam and oyster bays off of Long Island, land preservation, some other cleanups. If passed, it would be the first Environmental Bond Act to fly in New York since, I believe, 1996.
So because this is a bond act, it has to be approved by the legislature, but then it also goes to voters, right? I don't know how the voters feel about environmental issues, but any insight about whether there would be any opposition on the ballot?
I think it ups Democratic turnout, which might help.
That's a great point.
All the Democratic lawmakers who are, you know, in the majority, pretty newly in the majority, who are facing re-election. So that was my first thought, was that would up the turnout. Democrats would want to come out and vote for it, so it would be an advantage for them.
And in a presidential year, in a blue state like New York, where the President Donald Trump is not popular, and a big Democratic turnout is expected anyway to vote for president, that probably increases the odds of something like a bond act getting approved.
Right. So the state of the state was obviously the big story of the week, but something else happened that was significant. The Republicans in the Assembly now have a new leader. It's Will Barclay from the Central New York region. He's an attorney, very well respected in the Republican conference. I believe Steve Hawley, another Republican Assembly member, was going for it. He dropped out of the so-called race. I mean, it's not really a race. It's behind closed doors. They choose it. Do we see any more power out of the Assembly Minority Conference under Will Barclay?
I don't know. I think it's going to be more of the same. Yeah, Barkley's from a very prominent Syracuse family law firm that's very well known there. But he's not like a rabble rouser. He isn't like from the right wing of the party. I think it's going to be more of the same. His predecessor, Brian Kolb, who had to resign because of getting the DWI charge, was not always, all that loud about
and
his
we
opinions,
found,
let's put it that way.
We found out this week that he did have quite an opinion when he was pulled over. Tell us about that.
Well, that's right. He had 2 times the legal blood alcohol content, and when the tow truck driver came, because his state car was in a ditch, he said, "My wife was driving. You know how women drive."
And have we seen him this week at all? I didn't see him yesterday because he's still a member of the assembly.
I don't think he was doing court.
Oh, right. I guess
on Thursday. So he was a little bit busy and couldn't really come in. But, he plans to keep his assembly job. So I assume we'll see him again.
Right. And I saw that he pleaded not guilty to the charges yesterday, which.
Yeah, I don't quite understand that.
I guess maybe take a plea deal, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you both for being here very much. Karen DeWitt from New York Public Radio, Yancey Roy from Newsday. Thank you both for joining us on the roundtable.
Thank you.
Thanks.
To learn more about what we covered on tonight's show, head over to New York Now's website at nynow.org. Until then, I'm Dan Clark. This is New York Now. Have a great week and be well.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.